Welcome back to Sustainability in the Sea, an ocean podcast for ocean people, produced by ocean people, by none other than FutureSwell. Me and Alex are here today.
We're excited to have you.
Yeah, so excited. All right, before we get into the episode, just quick little reminders, little things going on. So first is that you guys saw that we produced our first short social media series at five. Finding Blackfish. That was all about me and Alex's quest in the San Juan Islands to go see orcas in the wild. Mm-hmm. We have a video series on it. We also have a Stoked on Solutions podcast episode on it. Mm-hmm. If you want to hear the...
And how the community came together to kind of protect their local fauna, which are the orcas.
It was literally so amazing. Yeah. So our second series is about to come out in partnership with Bodhi Patil, who you guys know is on the FutureSwell team. He visited Polynesia over the summer, and we've been working with him for the past few months to produce an incredible story about the wisdom of the Pacific. It's called The Power of the Pacific, and I would love for you guys to learn about all of the topics that we cover in those episodes. They're going to be posted on our social media, which I know you guys are already following. But just a heads up, that's coming up. And I can't wait for the one after that, too.
I know. We have a lot in the pipeline.
And then the next update is that for those of you that are not subscribed to our Blue Messages program, we send like around 2 to 3 texts per month to your phone. You can sign up. And they're all going to be calls to action. So I think before it used to be like sometimes it was education. Sometimes it was like, did you catch this episode? I think we're completely switching it over to be calls to action. So sign a petition, sign up for the Climate Corps, here's a job, those types of things. So they're all going to be links for you to take broader action for the ocean, and they'll be delivered right to your phone. That's the idea behind Blue Messages. So if you haven't joined that already, I would really recommend joining it. It's one of those programs that I think Hannah, our marketing manager, and I just kind of felt like you guys needed, because why read an inbox when you can wake up to a text message on how to save the ocean?
Yeah, super cool, super easy. Sign up now.
Yeah. So, okay, what are we talking about today?
Today, we're talking about our ocean experiences, and specifically our kind of sketchy ocean experiences.
Yeah, just, you know, a little life-threatening. You know, I think that we invite everyone to care for the ocean, but, you know, the ocean is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And
gotta remember that.
It's deeply powerful, and you sometimes don't learn that lesson until you learn it personally. And me and Alex have a handful of those stories. And so we just wanted to share with you guys some deeply humbling experiences that each of us had that just reminded us that this is planet ocean and we are just an ant in comparison to this ecosystem.
Yeah, and we're often like promoting like, all right, stewardship, kind of like we get to enjoy the ocean and therefore we have to protect it and take care of it. We also don't want to take it for granted. And so...
Yeah, we need deep respect and reverence for something as powerful as this. That I can't believe that human impacts have impacted the ocean so significantly when it's so resilient and so powerful. And so, all right, this is the Ocean Exploration Diaries.
Let's do it. Let's get into it. Okay, Carissa, so let's start with you. What is one experience that you kind of remember that you thought, hey, this is not safe?
Wait, should I do my bad one? We'll do the moderate one. Okay.
We're gonna get both of them. So
okay, so the moderate one actually happened kind of recently. It happened last year. I was on an expedition, and essentially the expedition, everyone was just really excited. It was a 2-week expedition. This was day 2. All right. The first field day. Everyone had different goals for their expedition, but the main thing is that we were on a huge ship, and then depending on the goals of each team, you would go out on like a smaller Zodiac. Mm-hmm. And
so like what, 18 feet, something that's pretty small.
Which is like shorter. It's probably, 18 feet. We'll call it that. And this was our first field operation. And
you were studying dolphins?
Yeah, we were studying dolphins. Cool. Everyone was excited. People had come from all over. There were experts. We were all coming together. I was a storyteller. And we were doing surveys. Day one of surveys, baby. So because there were other teams on the boat, this Zodiac was being used by multiple teams. And the other team had gone out that morning. And we were going out like midday or that afternoon. Mm-hmm. And so we were learning. I also want to just highlight that the ship that was hosting the expedition leads mainly focused on deep sea exploration. And because of that, there's a lot of robotics involved. There's not, they're not really going out on Zodiacs that often. So this is very much like was adapted to meet the needs of the specific expedition. Okay. All that to be said, we're out there. All right. We are deeply offshore. This, I'm going to, it was my fault that we were offshore. They were like, oh, let's, cruise the coastline because these certain species of dolphin cruise coastline. And I was like, let's go find pelagic species of dolphin.
Let's find the cool stuff.
That's good. Not just the cool. There's cool. Anyway, so what ended up happening is we were like, okay, we can survey. Like, we have like a good window. We had a lot of time. We were all, our cameras were charged. We were ready. We had our binoculars. We were all talking story. And the coxswain of the boat, so the, you know, captain, the driver, was not part of our expedition team, but actually had a different role on the ship. He just had a lot of experience boat driving. So he was our boat driver. So
that's typically how it goes on an expedition like that. You're gonna have like coxswains that work on the ship, but they will drive your small boats around as well.
Yeah. So we are in and out of service because we're offshore. I think we're off the coast of Lanai, actually, and deeply. And we like realized we're like out of gas.
Oh no, that's the one place you don't want to be out of gas is in the middle of the ocean.
So we're this is now the situation. So how this happened and everyone, like, issues that happen in the ocean like happen for a lot of different reasons. So none of us checked before, so it's like a culmination of mistakes. We were all too excited. We all had a lot of trust in people. Like, roles maybe weren't clear because we were all just so excited. There wasn't a refill in gas in between, like, the morning cruise on the Zodiac and the afternoon cruise. And this was our first time doing both in one day, so we were learning, right? And typically, like, this ship hadn't done that before, so this is, like, We didn't check.
Yeah,
so
you learned as you go.
We realize we're running out of gas. And we're like, okay, how big is this tank? None of us have been on this Zodiac before. Okay, we're in and out of service. Okay, and then this is when it gets, like, really scary, which is that we realize that, so we're losing light. We're in the afternoon. The trade winds are off. So if, because of where we're oriented on the islands, if we, say, the engine turns off and won't start back on because we don't have gas, the trade winds actually don't blow us to the island. It blows us towards Antarctica, or like towards the South Pacific. And so it was very, and the ship was like far. Okay. So we're like, all right, what are we going to do? Gas tanks are very finicky and very, very differently based off of the little Zodiac you're in. And so we are like, okay, all we can do is go back to the ship until this gas runs out. Like,
get as close as possible.
We have no other option.
Like bocce ball.
Right. And so we are like, in the process of that, let's make sure we get back into service, right? So we use our gas to go the path of least resistance to the best that we can, as close as we can to the island, and then directly to the ship. And we're like in and out of service. We start calling people because there's a lot of people on the ship. They're not coming through. They're like finicky. We're all using WhatsApp because people are coming from different countries. Like, it's not great. And so we're like, okay, we don't have backup. We don't have whatever. We don't like it. And I just feel like these are the moments when you look around at your team and you're like, like, how much experience does everyone have here?
I probably should have been talking about beforehand, but
yeah, here we are. I mean, yeah, we're innovating new things, new collaborations. Okay, how much experience does everyone have here? And for me, which is like, I don't know, this is a personal thing, but I'm always like, how much like loyalty does everyone have to each other, right? Because in sketchy situations, like for example, I'm on a boat with Alex. I'm gonna save Alex first because this is my partner in all of life, right? Versus like the stranger that I don't know. and I, it became very clear to me, like, wow, like, this is day one of this expedition. Like, we are all pretty much strangers. And all of us are going to deal with the situation differently. Texts were going through more than phone calls. So we got some texts out. And then what ended up happening is the ship, because we ran out of gas, the ship, we just tried to get in eyesight of the ship. And so if they were at the bow of the ship with binoculars, if they could see us, then they would know exactly where we are. So they could either send like another boat or come get us. And what ended up happening is they actually had to move the giant ship to come get us.
Wow.
Because we ran out. And it was
so you completely ran out of gas at that point.
It was idling, but we were like, we cannot be going fast.
Yeah.
And the winds pick up in the afternoon in Hawaii, and the winds were getting stronger. So we're like, it actually doesn't, what ended up happening is it made sense for us to not use our little fumes to try to get closer to the ship because of the winds. It made more sense for us to try to stay in the same place, to use our gas to stay in the same place so they could come to us, and then use that last bit of gas to get from like to the side to get onto the ship.
Wow. That sounds like a sketchy situation. Glad you
made
it
through. It's pretty mild compared to the rest of the stories we had.
All right.
For today. I'm happy I made it alive. And also, I love my team that we were on that, in that experience with. And I learned early on in that expedition that I could trust them in a situation like that. Learned the hard way, but nonetheless, forever bonded. You're forever bonded when sketchy things like this stuff happen to you.
That is kind of true.
Host and design educator Eric Benson interviews acclaimed climate scientists and sustainability experts to find out how designers can help combat the climate crisis in their college classrooms. The discussions on this program are geared to help you climify your syllabi to assign projects that not only teach design fundamentals, but also can have a positive impact on our climate. You can find Climify on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the conversation and become a climate designer, you can follow the show on Instagram at Climify Podcast, or head over to our great teaching resources at climatedesigners.org/edu.
Okay, what story do you have prepared?
All right, I think my first story of the two...
Alaska?
Yeah, we'll start in Alaska. So when I was in... just graduated from undergrad, I was a scientific diver. And so I know, it was kind of fun. So I went up to Alaska to do some scientific scuba diving.
For a few months, right? For the summer.
Yeah, for a summer. I was helping out a PhD student, Jared. Thanks, Jared. And he was studying king crab, blue king crab, up in the middle of nowhere, the middle of the Bering Sea. And so, like, I was in an island. The indigenous population there, it was like a small village, had about 400 people. They had a small, like, community-led fire department, and that was kind of their resources. And so we were diving out
there.
That's
where you were living.
Yeah, that's where we're living, and that's where we were diving around that island. And yeah, we were diving out there kind of a lot, and had not a lot of resources if anything did go bad. So we're diving out there, and because we're in the middle of the Bering Sea, like, the seas are pretty rough. And the current is ripping all the time. And so, like...
And what are you doing? You're doing transect surveys?
Primarily transect surveys diving, yeah. We're looking for these itty-bitty king crab that are, like, the size of, like, a quarter.
You and Jared.
Yeah, me and Jared primarily. And then we would have, like, a third person come every now and then. Like, a volunteer. Okay. But basically, me and Jared. So, basically, like, how you deal... I don't know if many of you scuba dive, but how it goes is you typically go down on a line, and then you... do your transect or you do your dive at the bottom, and then you go back to your line and then kind of come up nice and slow so you don't get any air embolisms or decompression illness or anything like that. So we do our dive, we go in, and it's freezing. Like, as soon as you jump in, the water, I'm in a dry suit, but I have my face is exposed, obviously. Every time the water hits your face, it's just like a punch to the face. It was so cold and miserable. And I get massively seasick super easily, so that didn't help. But, yeah, all in all, pretty rough diving conditions. So, in one of these dives, we go down, and the current's ripping. So, we're like hanging on to this line that's anchored on the bottom with like a giant cinder block that we had. And we are like pulling our way down to the bottom, like because we look like flags in a windy day as our bodies. And we were just trying to barely hold on. We get to the bottom and it's a little better somehow. The currents are a little worse at the top.
Did you guys have protocols of whether to call it?
We did. And a lot of times we did call it. But this time we got to the bottom and we kind of just held on to the rocks and we were like, we could probably do this. Our days at sea were kind of limited and we had a lot of work to do. So it was, that's the unfortunate thing about scientific diving sometimes, is sometimes you push the boundary.
To get the work done.
Yeah, to get the work done. And it's not the best all the time. So that's what we did. We go down, we hold onto the rocks, and we're like, oh, we can kind of hold on without getting blown away. That's a good sign. Let's do our survey. And our survey is 60 meters. And how it works is like we kind of both, one of us swims to the end, and then we kind of swim to each other in the middle, cross each other, and then finish on opposite sides. And so I started at the starting point. I went all the way down and then back. And then I had to go get the measuring tape that we set out on the bottom.
Wait, what's the visibility like on this? Can you see your partner?
No, it's like 20 feet. Okay. And so it was like 20 feet visibility. We're sitting at like 60 feet depth. Pretty unfortunate thing that a lot of scientific divers do is that you kind of like split up as buddies, which is, I advise against. I say stick with your buddy at all times if you can. But we were on the same transect line, mm-hmm. and ideally, as long as you don't get pushed away from this transect line, you're like within 60 meters of the person. So definitely not ideal. But yeah, so ultimately we do our dive, we collect all of our data, things are going well, and I have to go and like reel in the tape. And because the current is super strong, I like have to work a little bit harder than I expected and than I was used to go get the tape and reel it back in. So I'm doing my thing, I reel in the tape, I get back to our anchor line, where we're going to come up slowly, and Jared's not there. Jared is halfway up the line already, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool, he made it, he's good. I like clip everything to myself, I'm ready to go up, and I realize, oh no, I'm out of air. And luckily this is the only time...
Were you not checking?
So when I went to go grab the transect line, at the like when I started to go get it, I was like, I have this much air, this is how much it typically takes. But because the current was so strong, I was huffing and puffing, using more air than I expected. So I got to the end, and I was like, I could tell, it was like...
Oh, you felt it. I felt it before
I noticed. And I was like, uh-oh. And then I looked down at my air gauge, and I was like, it was basically on, like, the zero. And I was like, I know I have a handful of sips left, but I still need to do a safety stop, and I obviously need to get to the surface. And luckily, I had just done my dive master training, like, a couple months before this, so I was prepped on all the safety protocols of, like, what exactly I should do. Like,
my gosh.
Yeah, I was in a very good state mentally. But I knew, like, I am out of air. And so I'm coming up the line very slowly because I don't want to get any decompression illness because there's not a hyperbaric chamber on this tiny little island. I would have to get, like, medevac to Alaska mainland, like Anchorage or something.
Oh, how embarrassing.
And one, embarrassing, which I would not like. And two, like, I would have to get, like, a private plane come out to get me, put me on oxygen, get me to Anchorage. Like, this is like a multi-day process, I would think. Like, it is not safe. And so I find him sitting at our 15 feet, like, safety stop. So you're supposed to do 3 minutes at 15 feet, just staying there, just to let your body off gas a little bit. And so I, like, am, like, kind of rushing, but also kind of, like, going as slow as I can, like, kind of holding my breath, kind of just exhaling little bubbles is what you're supposed to do. And I, like, as soon as I reach him, I, like, grab him, I, like, look him in the eyes, and I give him, like, the dive signals. I'm out of air, we need to share air. And so, I grab his main regulator.
Oh, you just take it out of his mouth?
Essentially. He, like, knew exactly what was happening. I grab his main regulator, he grabs his backup, and we ultimately were able to share air for our safety stop.
Wait, you're supposed to push out bubbles as you're running out of air, even though that stuff is like
If you're ascending, you always want to be exhaling, right. Even if you're not out of air, because air will expand. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want that to expand in your body. So I was living out like little bubbles, bubble.
Like this is what I need to survive.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my goodness. But after that, I was like shook. And then he gets to the top and he's like, hey, you good? And I was like, yeah, like it couldn't have been a better out of air situation, which is never a good situation, but it couldn't have been a better one for me. And he was like, oh yeah, that's happened to me before. And I was like, why are you so nonchalant about this? And he was like, this is Alaska diving for you. And I was like, okay. And basically, I took a little bit of time to, regroup. And then about an hour and a half later, we jump in for another dive. And this one, the next one was a lot more protected, a little more shallow. So didn't run out of air that time. But, oh, that was, I got my blood pressure going for sure.
Did you think you were
going
to die?
I didn't think I was going to die. I thought worst case scenario is I was going to jet to the surface. Maybe, jet as slowly as possible and, have to potentially go to Anchorage to get the hyperbaric chamber situation.
My gosh.
So.
I'm so happy you made it.
Here to live the tale. Didn't get any decompression sickness or anything like that. So, moral of that one is just be careful diving. So many people I see diving, they'll take their open water course and then it'll be multiple years and they're like, I'm diver certified, I'm gonna go on this super cool adventure, and I'm just like, refresh, know what you're doing, because it is dangerous. You're at 60 feet, you're at 30 feet, even 10 feet could be super dangerous if you just jump to the surface. So that's my take. I'm also I have dive professional background, so I'm just uber careful because of that as well.
Honestly, this makes me so scared to dive in Alaska. I don't even know. I really know we really want to go together and I want to see a glacier, but I don't know if I want to dive.
The cold water kind of makes it unenjoyable anyway, so honestly, I don't blame you.
Well, we honestly were wanting to tell more stories, but I think that's going to be it for this episode, and we'll just roll over the next stories to the next episode.
Part two, baby.
Yeah, we'll see you on I hope you like this. Let us know if you like it.
Yeah, please let us know.
We want to do more storytelling that's not just always educational, but instead just kind of really connects you back to the ocean and teaches you lessons that we've learned in our life. So,
ocean people for ocean people.
Yeah, let us know if you like this. And the next Sustainability in the Sea episode is going to be two more ocean exploration diary stories. So I can't wait for you guys to hear that too. Thanks for tuning in. And this has been another episode from Sustainability in the Sea.
See you next time.